It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This was a surprise, but it certainly wasn't a shock because it's no secret that the president has not been particularly happy with the attorney general in the last few weeks. First of all, when Bill Barr came out and said in an interview with the Associated Press that to date he had not seen evidence of election fraud of the scale which would overturn the results of the election. The president not particularly happy about that. Bill Barr had to come out and say, well, we are still investigating reports of election fraud. But when it became known late last week that Hunter Biden had been under investigation by the Department of Justice since 2018, and Bill Barr had kept that under wraps during the election, that pretty much was the last straw for President Trump. Though, in a couple of tweets that the president issued a short time ago, it did seem like the parting was more amicable than we would be led to believe that the state of the relationship was. The president tweeted, quote, just had a very nice meeting with Attorney General Bill Barr at the White House. Our relationship has been a very good one. He has done an outstanding job. As per letter, which Bill will be leaving just before Christmas to spend the holidays with his family. The actual date's the 23rd. Deputy Attorney General Jeff Rosen, an outstanding person, will become acting Attorney General. Highly respected Richard Donahue will be taking over the duties of the Deputy Attorney General. Thank you to all.
Okay, so that was John Roberts, at least a part of his report last night on William Barr stepping down. And it's interesting, the timing. I know that we have mixed feelings. At least I'm assuming that you have the same mixed feelings I have about William Barr. He's done some things that were just phenomenal. I loved his manner. I loved his sense of humor. I love the way he spoke, the way he handled himself. I love the way he steadfastly stood by the president when he was under attack. But the same is also true when why in the world did he, and we have it on good authority, that he instructed people to not talk about the Hunter Biden investigation, to keep it low so that it wouldn't affect the election. We also know that Attorney General Barr made that public statement that there was not enough fraud, that the Justice Department had not seen enough fraud to overturn the election. And the problem is that the Justice Department was not investigating all the kinds of fraud that we have been reporting. So that was the president felt that was a betrayal. But I want to say John goes into great detail, and I didn't use his detail, but I will tell you that there are I think that the parting was certainly amicable. We have every reason to believe that it was. The president had some lovely things to say, just had a very nice meeting with Attorney General Bill Barr at the White House. Our relationship has been a very good one. He has done an outstanding job. As per letter, Bill will be leaving just before Christmas to spend the holidays with his family. And Bill Barr's letter, I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. I'm greatly honored that you called on me to serve your administration and the American people once again as Attorney General. I'm proud to have played a role in the many successes and unprecedented achievements you have delivered for the American people. Your record is all the more historic because you accomplished it in the face of relentless, implacable resistance. Your 2016 victory speech, in which you reached out to your opponents and called for working together for the benefit of the American people, was immediately met by a partisan onslaught against you, in which no tactic, no matter how abusive or deceitful, was out of bounds. The nature of this campaign was the effect to cripple, if not oust, your administration with frenzied and baseless accusations of collusion with Russia. Few could have weathered these attacks, much less forge ahead with a positive program for the country. You built the strongest and most resilient economy in American history, one that has brought unprecedented progress to those previously left out. You have restored American military strength by brokering historic peace deals in the Mideast. You have achieved what most thought impossible. You have curbed illegal immigration and enhanced the security of our nation's borders. You have advanced the rule of law by appointing a record number of judges committed to constitutional principles. With Operation Warp Speed, you delivered a vaccine for coronavirus on a schedule no one thought conceivable, a feat that will undoubtedly save millions of lives. And that's just part of what he writes. He ends by saying, wishing you, Melania, and your family a Merry Christmas and blessed holiday season. God bless. William Barr. I just wanted to say, you know, I do think Barr made a lot of mistakes. He certainly, we don't know the inner workings, why in the world he never pushed forward the Durham report, why he wasn't more aggressive on that. Those were disappointments. And why he did not aggressively pursue or make the FBI go after voter fraud and all the violence on the streets, all of that. But he also did some very good things. So history will have a mixed report on William Barr, but I have to say, I think, by and large, my personal opinion, he's a man of incredible character who was operating under horrible circumstances. I've told you the Justice Department is a cesspool. It's a cesspool. And there are very few Trump supporters in that building or in that agency. And so that's what he was fighting. And so anyway, that's the story on that. As far as I can tell. Now you're going to wonder what's happening with the election, aren't you? And you know you're not going to hear it. I was watching Fox last night in part, at least a special report, and they're just not going to tell you some of the things that I'm going to tell you. Yesterday, the electors met, and Joe Biden now is officially the president-elect. He received, I think, I don't remember how many. We're going to get to that in just a second when we talk to Hans. But he received enough electoral votes to be, actually now he could call himself the president-elect. But of course, it's not over because some, I believe it's seven states now, also chose alternate electors who are electors representing President Trump, because this will likely go all the way to Congress. And there will be a battle there as to which electors they seat. Will it be the Biden electors or the Trump electors? Yesterday, Nevada's GOP electors stood outside their state house, and this is just a very short little sound of what it was like for them as they pledged their votes to President Trump. Let's listen.
All right, electors, that is six votes certified for President Donald J. Trump. Mr. Chairman, we are on to the next item.
All right, so there, that was as quick as it was. I had a whole list of these, and I don't know where it went, so I'm trying to do this from memory, but I believe it's Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Pennsylvania. How many is that? No, that's five. So I don't want to misspeak, but New Mexico, I think, was one of those, too, that certified Trump electors who will be ready at the ready, and this has happened before in our election cycle. I think it happened in 1960. When Democratic electors in Hawaii, it looked as though Nixon had won, but they established electors for Kennedy, and they actually were used at a later date because Kennedy ended up winning that election because it was so close. So there's a precedent for having electors selected from the state for another candidate, and that's what they've done. I think it's seven states. So now Michigan. Michigan is a whole other issue. They ran into terrible trouble yesterday. Let me just say, excuse me, allergies. The Michigan Republican Party, I'm reading this from Big League Politics, are standing in the way of principal conservatives in the legislature hoping to seat a slate of pro-Trump electors to combat the vote steal in the state. State Representative Gary Eisen has been yanked from his committee assignments. Oh, lovely. By Republican state House leadership after going public about the plan and saying that violence could come as a result of the fallout from Republican lawmakers doing the right thing. Now, he wasn't advocating violence. He was on a radio show, and he said there could be some violence because of this conflict. So they stripped him of all of his committee assignments. And then in addition to that, Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky of Clarkville, I'm giving these details for those of you in Michigan listening, has shut down the Capitol. He did it yesterday, using COVID-19 as an excuse. So the Capitol was locked out. And what happened was the Trump electors, who were going to certify as alternative electors, tried to get into the Capitol. The police would not let them in, according to the governor. The orders, I think, the policeman says of Governor Whitmer, they couldn't let these Trump electors into the Capitol building. We have a little video of that because somebody tweeted it. Let's listen to what that sounded like. Clip 8.
Per the Capitol Commission, per the governor's office, per the Speaker of the House, per the Speaker of the Senate, the Capitol is closed unless you have an office here to conduct business today or if you are taking part in the Electoral College process. Anybody else is not permitted to come in.
They are electors.
Yeah, the electors are already here. They've been checked in.
Not all the electors are inside.
All 16 electors that you've been advised by the governor's staff that we're going to be here to vote in the Electoral College have been checked in. They're already here.
But the GOP electors,
I understand.
Ian's here.
The Capitol is closed. Everybody that's permitted
come forward.
All right, so I just wanted you to hear that. I don't know what the outcome of that was. This is when we need to... Pat Colbeck to talk to us. Maybe someone there knows. And actually, if you're from Michigan and you know what happened yesterday, our phone number is 888-589-8840. We'll take your call right now. 888-589-8840. So this is Republicans against Republicans, to be clear. And we've told you that at least Pat Colbeck has made it clear that in Michigan, the Republicans, they're weak or they're rhinos. Not all of them. There's some really good guys fighting. In fact, one of them has just been, you know, censored and taken out of his committee assignments. That's what Paul Ryan did to conservatives. And that's what John Boehner did to conservatives. Just to put this in perspective, they would take away their staff budget. They would not give them any money to be reelected. They were isolated like on an island, punished because they were conservatives. That's what Paul Ryan, that cute little guy who liked to work out in the gym, did to conservatives. And now, of course, he's working against President Trump and all conservatives. He's working at Fox. He's part of the decision-making team there. And, you know, he's on Netflix. He's making a lot of money now, Paul Ryan is, you know, with his nice little smile and his workout. I just talk about treachery. And this is what we're seeing. Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey shut down, he's a Republican, shut down the Capitol so that these people could not enter. And the police cooperated with it, and of course it was something that the governor ordered as well. So how convenient. So I don't know exactly, again, what happened with them, and we'll have to find that out. So now, the other big story that came out yesterday, and I guess I need to speak more quickly here, Dominion Software, the report came out, and we find that it was intentionally designed to influence election results. Russell Ramsland, who was with the Reagan administration, he's a former NASA official. He's one of those people that reviewed that Dominion system when votes were flipped to Joe Biden from President Trump. And, I mean, there's more to the story than that, but that's as simple as I know how to describe it. They write in their report, the system intentionally generates an enormously high number of ballot errors. The electronic ballots are then transferred for adjudication. The intentional errors lead to bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, and no audit trail. And then they go to say, based on our study, we conclude that the Dominion voting system should not be used in Michigan. We further conclude that the results of Antrim County should not have been certified. And they talk about the memory sticks and all of it. They go into great detail. 13th Circuit Court Judge Kevin Eisenheimer approved this this investigation. And he approved the report being published. So he's a real champion up there, it seems to me. 13th Circuit Judge Kevin Eisenheimer, he's one of the few judges who has allowed actually investigation of what's going on in our voting, the whole election fraud. Ramsland said there's like a 68% error rate, according to what they had discovered in the Dominion systems that they looked at. And by the way, 48 other Michigan counties use these same machines, 48 other counties. And so this is a whole new issue that's going to have to be determined. By the way, the Arizona Senate Judiciary Committee is seizing voting machines for forensic audit. That's another story I wanted to tell you. And there's more, but we're going to do it in a minute. I want to talk about the Electoral College that met yesterday. Hans von Spakovsky is an expert. He will join us next. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
I'm Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word since 1938 at only $5 a Bible. You know, before the COVID-19 restrictions came, I visited Papua, Indonesia, where I met Pastor Tandi. He had befriended a witch doctor, a man that was all about black magic, sorcery, voodoo, I mean, all that spiritual darkness, right? And he began to unfold the gospel for this man, eventually inviting him to an evangelistic crusade. The man showed up, not by himself, but with 120 of his apprentices, women and men learning to be witch doctors. And would you know it, having heard the gospel plainly and powerfully preached that night, they bent the knee to Jesus, and they're learning what it means to be new creations in Christ, but they live where it's virtually impossible to get a Bible. Learn how you can be a blessing to these former witch doctors, new creations in Christ, by calling 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD, or by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org. And God bless you for caring.
It all came down to the ultrasound. And I saw this little lima bean looking thing with a halo, which I thought was incredible.
A baby wasn't really in the plan for this young mom. After seeing a halo on her baby on ultrasound at a preborn center, she was still leaning towards abortion.
And I got to hear the heartbeat, and I got chills. In that moment, I just felt God's arms come around me and hug me and tell me that it was going to be okay.
Preborn centers are the largest providers of free ultrasounds in the country, as they equip centers to save more babies and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby.
My choice to become a mom and hear those little footsteps running down the hallway every morning is all because I had an ultrasound. It saved my life and hers.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
At Liberty University, we believe in honoring service. That's why we offer first responder and military communities deep discounts on all of our 450-plus online programs. Military students, veterans, and spouses pay just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and $275 to $300 per credit hour for graduate and PhD courses. First responders receive a 25% tuition discount, and those who qualify may be able to use both discounts for even greater savings. It's our way to say thank you for all you do. To learn more, text AGREE to 49595.
If Bill Gates and the Democrats have their way, you won't be eating at the Panda Express anytime soon. Gates said on CNN the next wave of the China virus is going to be severe. He predicted more shutdowns. As a matter of fact, he said restaurants and bars should expect to be shut down for up to 6 months. Gates went on to say that we may not be able to get back to normal until the year 2022. Here's what I don't understand. Most data shows Americans are relatively safer in restaurants than they are anywhere else. And even more puzzling is why CNN would give a platform to a guy who is clearly not qualified to offer any sort of informed opinion on the China virus. Bill Gates is a college dropout who has absolutely no professional training or education in medicine or epidemiology. Look, he's an incredibly successful software developer and investor, but he knows about as much as pandemics as Doogie Howser, MD. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
In the last hour, California's 55 electors casted their votes for President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, officially putting them over the 270 Electoral College vote threshold needed to win the presidency.
I am pleased to announce that Joseph R. Biden has received 16 votes for President of the United States.
From Georgia's Senate chambers,
the vote for President of the United States was 20 votes for Joseph R. Biden.
To an auditorium in Pennsylvania.
Lady Harris, the state of California, number of votes, 10.
To the state capitol in Wisconsin.
With that,
the Electoral College's 538 electors met in all 50 states to officially cast their ballots. It's a formality enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. Electors cast their votes on two paper ballots, one for president and for vice president, count the results of the vote, then sign and verify six certifications of the vote.
Madam Secretary.
This year's meetings were different. Nevada's six electors met virtually via Zoom because of COVID-19, while security concerns forced Michigan to shut down its capital ahead of its electoral meeting. after reports of credible threats of violence. The historic Electoral College vote occurring as President Trump continues to contest the election results. In fact, Republican electors in Pennsylvania and Georgia met separately to cast their own votes for President Trump just to keep all legal options open. And while technically today's electors could have voted for whomever they want, 33 states have passed laws requiring their electors to vote for the candidate who won the popular vote in their state. Those who vote differently from the popular vote are called faithless electors.
Faithless electors have never come close to impacting the outcome of a presidential election. Most of the time when we see faithless electors, it's a single elector.
Okay, so that's part of Brian Yenis' report. Sandy Rios with you this morning, and that is what happened. Joe Biden yesterday, 306 electoral votes, he and Kamala Harris. So now he really is officially the president-elect. Up until yesterday, he wasn't, but everyone seemed to think that he should be called that. Hans von Spakovsky is an expert on election law and all things constitutional. He's with Heritage Foundation. He's a fellow there and much, much more. And I've asked him to join us this morning so that we can kind of make some sense of this. Hans, thanks for joining me.
Sandy, thanks for having me back.
All right. I just want to say, before I give you a chance to say something, we have seven states that have, I won't say certified, but some I think are certified, have presented an alternate state slate of electors. Brian said two, but there's more. It's Wisconsin, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, New Mexico, and Nevada are presenting. There's a dual slate coming out of those states. So, Hans, explain to us, first of all, rudimentarily, even expand on what Brian said about what happened yesterday. Where does that all go, and how is it officially recorded, and what does it really mean in terms of the election?
Well, what happens is state officials, usually it's the governor and the secretary of state, certify the results of the electoral count, the electoral vote that happened yesterday, and they send those votes to six different sources, including the archivist of the United States, and then to Congress. I mean, that's the main target of where that information goes. And what will happen is all of those votes will sit in Congress until the first week in January, when Congress will hold a joint session. And at that joint session, with all the members of the Senate and House there, the vice president will open up what they've received from each state, and they will actually count the Electoral College votes to say who is the president and who is the vice president. Now, the only thing that could change that is two possibilities. One, under the federal statute that governs the counting in Congress, if there is a written objection to the votes from a particular state or a group of states that's signed by both a senator and a member of the House, then they have to stop the counting, and in each House, the Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives, they then have to have a debate and have to have a vote on that objection. And if the objection is voted down, then they resume the counting. The other thing that could happen, but is highly unlikely, Sandy, is what happened in the 1876 election. That was, remember, Republican Rutherford B. Hayes versus Democrat Samuel Tilden, and there were actually eerily similar disputes in three states, Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina, where there were all these allegations of fraud and misconduct and wrongdoing. And the state sent two sets of Electoral College votes to Congress. And Congress didn't know what to do, so Congress appointed a 15-member bipartisan commission. And the commission examined what had happened in each of the states, and then they voted along party lines to award the Electoral College votes of each of the three states to the Republican, Rutherford B. Hayes, which is how he became president with one Electoral College vote.
Wow. So that is kind of the pattern, if it's called a pattern. That's the previous incidents. That's kind of like what might happen. But Hans, just to get in the weeds a little bit, because we do have these seven states who have are submitting another slate of electors for President Trump. We know, you and I both know, that there are already at least three congressmen in the House that are going to object to the electors. We don't know if we have a senator yet. So you're saying if that happens, the houses will separate. Now, will they take individual votes, or will they separate and talk and then come back and take another joint vote?
No, they have to. I think they have to deal with it separately in each house, according to the statute.
Okay, and it will be the new Congress, not the current configuration, right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
But it's still a majority Democrat.
Well, it's majority Democrat in the House, certainly. The Senate, we don't know.
Well, right. By a minute, I was thinking the House, Senate. Yeah. Yes, right. Senate, we don't know. We won't even know on January 6th, will we?
Well, it depends on whether or not Georgia has the same big, long delay in counting of the ballots in places like Fulton County that it had in the last election. You know, normally, look, in past elections in Georgia, they've known who the winner was on election eve.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the way it's worked in the world, isn't it? I mean, that's all the elections I remember growing up. It was the way it went. People didn't take a break in the middle of the night and, you know, go have coffee and then have a few people stay and vote ballots, count ballots. It's just such a strange time. But that doesn't sound good, Hans. Even if it goes to that for President Trump, if it goes to that extent, and we're laying the groundwork for that to happen, the House certainly has. I don't know what the count is, but the Republicans keep picking up seats, but they still don't have the majority. So we know how that.
No, they don't. Yeah. I understand the frustration of everyone out there, the anger, particularly when you see the eyewitness accounts that have been appearing in hearings in Georgia and other places of the wrongdoing and misconduct folks saw. But I have to be realistic. The president and others who have sued have been almost uniformly unsuccessful in those lawsuits, and frankly, the chances of anything happening from this point forward other than Biden being declared the president when Congress meets in January is just pretty slim. I mean, I'm afraid to say it, but Biden is going to be the next president of the United States.
Well, I'm not ready to say that, Hans, because I know of a bunch of other things happening, too. You know, this morning I was just reporting, and I don't really want to get off on this with you because I want to talk about your expertise, but there's news stories out of Michigan with the Dominion system. There's a recount ordered in Atlanta, not in Atlanta, but in, I'm not sure which county, but another hand recount matching signatures. There's also a situation in Arizona where they're going to go back in and check their systems. A judge has ordered it, so there are some other things happening that could change the state of those electors. So I'm not ready to throw in the towel. I think I'm gonna fight to my last breath because, as you know as well as I do because of your own past, we're fighting against creeping totalitarianism, and really we can't have it. We can't have it. Life will be unbearable if we allow this to happen, and there'll be no more freedom. And I'm just not willing to lay that down yet. So.
I'm not either. I mean, I'm not saying to give up. I'm just saying that it's quite an uphill battle to change things and to get judges to recognize what happened between now and January 6th.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I think the Supreme Court has done their part in leading the way to cause judges not to do anything. And I want to talk to you about that. The Supreme Court ruling last Friday refusing to hear that challenge from Texas, they were asking if they could sue these other four states because if they had broken their constitutional duties. All right, so what do you think about the Supreme Court's response to that, Hans? I recognize what it means, but what in the world didn't you think they had something? They had standing. I was surprised that the court said they didn't have standing.
Well, I was surprised from a legal standpoint. I wasn't surprised from a political standpoint. And
right,
what I mean
exactly.
by that is, I actually think that Texas made a very good case that they did have standing. And for folks to understand that, that legal doctrine that the Supreme Court enforces is that you can't sue somebody unless you can show that you had a concrete injury. And what the Supreme Court said in their very short order was that Texas didn't have standing, that it couldn't show an injury for how a separate state carried out its elections. But the complaint and the brief supporting it was one of the best written legal arguments I've seen in a long, long time, Sandy. And it was very well done. And what they laid out was that by not following the Constitution, in fact, violating the Constitution in their administration of elections, those four states altered the outcome of the presidential race and therefore diminished or voided the votes of voters in Texas and other states that actually followed the Constitution. And I think, look, if states like Texas can't sue over something like that, well, then who can? You know, who can come in and claim a remedy? I don't think anybody can. And that's why I think they made a mistake when they said no standing, but it got them out of what you and I both know would have been extremely politically controversial of them coming in, hearing a case, and potentially overturning the elections in four states and potentially changing the outcome of the presidential race.
Yes, and I think that is the point. And that's what's so distressing about this, Hans. And I guess I also would say, if I were having coffee with the justices of the Supreme Court, I would remind them, if they didn't do their constitutional duty, which they didn't, their court is going to change. John Roberts will be rendered completely helpless when the court is stacked, which it will be. I don't understand why they can't. Hans, I'm just a regular person swinging away with the average person's knowledge about what's going on in the world, and I can see that. Why is there no fear in there? Why is there no vision? I just don't get that.
Look, I can't explain it to you other than to say that we have good justices and we have bad justices on the Supreme Court, and the three liberal justices on the court are always 100% predictable. You just can't always predict the behavior of the other justices.
Yeah.
And that's not really an answer, but I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah, no. Well, I have to say, Hans, I'm really happy to hear you say that you thought it was a good case because I should say on your behalf, that's a controversial view. Because everybody, I've heard so many other attorney pundits, you know, talked about how foolish it was and how silly and it would never happen and blah, 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 blah. And I'm so grateful to you for reiterating what I hear and what I think too. You're not the only one, that's for sure. John Eastman certainly agrees with you, as does Ken Starr, who worked on that case. I want to ask you about a different case because I'm confused about this one. Yesterday, the media was really happy because they reported that the Supreme Court rejected Trump election lawsuit. That, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, had two different parts. So can you explain what they rejected and what they did accept? Oh, my goodness, there's the music. Hans, can you stay with me a little longer? I just got carried away chatting with you. Is it possible?
No, sorry, Sandy. I've got something else coming up, so I apologize.
All right. We'll let that dangle. Oh, man. I just lost track. I was enjoying talking to you. Well, we appreciate your time this morning, Hans, and your wisdom. And so, but don't you give up either, and I know you won't. I know you won't. Write us into freedom here, okay?
Thanks
Hans,
for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Hans von Spakovsky, thank you, of Heritage Foundation. Sandy Rios in the morning. on AFR Talk.
Christmas calls for Christmas music. Get it now with the AFR app.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come.
Download the AFR app for free from your local app store and enjoy Christmas music from AFR all season long.
Mary, did you know that your baby boy...
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio.
We want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its savor, how will it be seasoned? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Matt Walsh wrote a piece for the Daily Wire where he said, "The contemporary American Christian is the most open-minded person to have ever existed. He's so open-minded, you can hardly tell he's Christian or has a mind at all. He has for a long time been open to the idea that marriage isn't permanent and sex isn't meant exclusively for marriage. He's basically open to whatever notions are popular. He is open, and where he is not open, he is silent."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. There is only one hope left for those who long for justice in our election of a president. A new Congress will have the responsibility to certify the results of the Electoral College on January 6. Until that is done, the selection of our next president is not official. To this point, justice has not been done. Massive amounts of voter fraud and feckless judges have resulted in the theft of the presidency. It's the crime of the millennium, and everybody paying attention knows it. One thing remains, for the people of God to cry out to the judge of all the earth to do what is right. If he chooses, he can intervene to expose all evil and see that justice is done. It may be God's will for us to suffer for forsaking him as a nation, but I do know God's part is justice and our part is to pray. For God to do his part, we must do ours.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, the Electoral College is expected to make a man deeply compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, the president-elect of the United States. When most Americans voted last fall, they were unaware of Joe Biden's exploitable family ties to CCP, business interests and operatives. That's because the media refused to report on hard evidence of this national security threat before the election, instead promoting false but deflecting narratives about Russian disinformation advanced by the candidate and his partisans. Now, news organizations are finally confirming that the Bidens have a serious China problem. Unfortunately, it seems so does his running mate, Kamala Harris, a radical leftist product of the same CCP-penetrated San Francisco political machine that has compromised Eric Swalwell, Dianne Feinstein, and Nancy Pelosi. Before a Biden or Harris administration is installed, we need clarity on how the Chinese Communist Party will benefit. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Every valley,
exalted, 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 shall be exalted.
I think both Beth and me, and it was incredibly brave of her.
Eye-opening. I just want to set this up because yesterday on MSNBC on Morning Joe, David French appeared. And David is, if you may know the name, but you may not know who he is. David is like the evangelical. Well, by that I mean, according to the press, he is the evangelical. I think, according to David French, he's the evangelical. He's the senior editor for the Dispatch, and that's part of National Review. He is the New York Times best-selling author. He wrote a book called The Great American Divorce. He's a graduate of Harvard. He's a former lecturer at Cornell Law School. He served as senior counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice and for Alliance Defending Freedom. Those are some of our friends. And so that's who David French is. But David French is now and has been a never-Trumper. And so, that's enough. I'll just say that about him because I want you to hear what he had to say. So he was on Morning Joe yesterday morning and had a few choice things to say about what was happening in terms of the election. So I wanted you to hear it and just think about it. This is a thinking exercise. It's like my mother would say, Sandra Kay, put on your thinking cap. All right, I want you to put on your thinking cap. And if you were talking to David French, think about what you might respond to him with after hearing him say this. Let's listen.
I think both Beth and me, and it was incredibly brave of her. She's been very brave throughout this entire process, speaking truth here. And I think a lot of us, me included, Beth included, and some others, watch what happened in this Jericho March in D.C., which included Eric Metaxas and other Christian leaders. And what we saw there wasn't normal, what you would call normal political, normal Christians involved in politics or normal involvement of Christianity in politics. What we saw was a dangerous fanaticism. And this is something that I think that people need to be aware of. What you're dealing with is there's a subset of Christians who support Trump, certainly not all. I don't think most, but a subset of Christians who support Trump, who believe that God had a very specific call on his life. And that any intent, any effort to stop him from having a second term is demonically inspired, is satanically inspired. And it's breeding this degree of fanaticism, this degree of religious fanaticism that I think could have real danger. And I don't think it's any coincidence that we have seen that there was we then saw violence later that same night. I mean, this is something that needs to be addressed squarely and directly and condemned squarely and directly, including by Christian leaders who supported Donald Trump.
Okay, David. So, first of all, he hates Trump. And so it's easy for him to say that he doesn't like Christians supporting Trump. But as usual with David, his thinking, look, this is what I see all the time. I'm up against this all the time. These brilliant people with these incredible pedigrees who cannot think. They have a ton of knowledge in their head, but they cannot think. They can't think critically. They have confused minds. I don't get that, but it's true. I see it all the time. So David is talking about the Jericho March that took place in D.C. on Saturday. He mentions Eric Metaxas, and then he says this is not normal Christian involvement in politics. It's a dangerous fanaticism. It's a subset of Christians who support Trump, who believe that God has a calling on his life, and anyone who opposes him is satanic, and maybe that's why we saw violence later in the streets. Really? Well, let me just talk about this a bit before I want you to listen to what Joe, Morning Joe, had to say after that. This is dangerous fanaticism. The fact that we Christians were there praying, marching around the Capitol, asking for God's deliverance, asking for him to grant us favor and have President Trump reelected. Now, to David's mind, this is all about, it's the Christian worship of Donald Trump. That's how David sees this. He does not see that if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris prevail, religious freedom will be gone. We will not have a president who declares the birth of Jesus, dying, being born, and then living and dying to save people from their sins, which is what President Trump did in his Christmas address. We will have none of that. We will be back to the Barack Obama. We're not a Christian nation. We're a nation of non-believers, of Muslims, of Buddhists, of atheists, and some Christians. We'll be back to that. We understand our children will be further assaulted in public schools. We know that Joe Biden, as soon as he's inaugurated, he's promised to issue an executive order allowing transgenders to be in bathrooms anywhere they want to be all over the planet, including your children's schools. That's what we understand. That's why the passion. And it is a righteous cause because those things are wicked. But David thinks it's because we worship Trump. And so he calls it a dangerous fanaticism. And then he goes on to how dare he say that's why we saw violence later that same night. Like Eric Metaxas and the people in the Jericho March went out and did violence that night. That's just stupid. Sorry. There's that word again. Sorry, mother. That is just so disconnected and ingenuous. And the violence that happened to the broader group of Trump supporters, Christian or not, happened from Antifa and Black Lives Matter to them. The stabbings were against them. But David doesn't care about that. That's okay. Just get over it and let Joe Biden take over and don't fight back. This is what we're going to have in our streets, David, and you might be a victim, your kids might be a victim, but I guess it's okay with you because this is a dangerous fanaticism. Okay, so Morning Joe had to jump in because you'll hear, he was raised Southern Baptist, and he had some thoughts on it too. Clip 5.
So, David, I mean, this is just, it's nauseating because you and I both were, are you Southern Baptist, by the way?
No, I'm Presbyterian.
Oh, my
PCA.
God. Look at this.
Holy cow.
Wow.
You're a lefty. But anyway.
No, I was predestined to be a Presbyterian. Sorry.
Oh, that's true. Exactly. Okay. So, but you and I in the 1990s, how many Sundays did we go to Sunday school and have people telling us, you know, character counts and you can't have a godly nation if Bill Clinton's in the White House? And we heard it from the pulpits, and we heard it on Wednesday nights at Wednesday night supper, and we heard it in training union, our kids. We heard it everywhere. It permeated all of Christian culture from 1992 to 2000 when character mattered. That's all we heard. And now you have people saying, former Christian leaders, saying you must die for Donald Trump. This is worth dying for a man who, I judge nobody, twice divorced. All right. But if I can figure this out, twice divorced, my God, have mercy on these other people who are perfect saints. Go down every beatitude, every single beatitude. Donald Trump is the antithesis. It's not like he's a little off on the Beatitudes. He is the antithesis of every Beatitude by the standard that they used on Bill Clinton, by the standard they used on every leader they've ever voted for. Donald Trump fails time and again, and now they're saying he's worth dying for?
Okay, well, let's see now. Thank you, Joe, for that keen insight. It explains again why Joe is so confused. Raised Southern Baptist, and now he just cannot understand, or he doesn't want to. It's possible he doesn't want to because Joe's had so much immorality in his own life. And I do find, you know, this happens to us when we lose our righteous choices. We start making excuses, and we do see the world. It changes how we feel about everything because we're kind of excusing ourselves. But I'll go back to what he had to say. Joe says it's nauseating. And then he says he was Southern Baptist. David says, I'm Presbyterian, which is a whole other issue. I will maybe get back to that. And how many Sundays did we go to school and go to church, to training union, to Sunday school, and hear about how character counts? We can't have a godly nation with Bill Clinton in the White House. We heard that over and over again from 1992 to 2000. Character matters. It permeated Christian culture. And now we have Christian leaders saying you must be willing to die for this man who's two times divorced. Donald Trump is the antithesis of every beatitude. Not the same standard they applied to Bill Clinton. All right, so I want to respond to this. First of all, there's no question that Donald Trump has a really horrible past. Yeah, so does Melania. I remember when they talked about, we thought about her being first lady or him being president. I was just so concerned. I was a Ted Cruz supporter. And I'm speaking now probably for a lot of Christians because of all the reasons we know about Ted. But after Ted lost the nomination, I went full in for Donald Trump because I knew what the alternative was. And so sometimes you make different decisions in choosing your Sunday school leader, your deacons, than you do choosing your elected leaders. And you have to weigh the one against the other. And Hillary Clinton is just wicked. She is. Donald Trump is a sinful man. That's not the same thing, actually. I didn't perceive him to be wicked. And he had great positions on the issues, including the issue of life. So I went with him. And I was concerned about Melania, but as things transpired, personally, I saw changes in him. I think we've seen incredible changes in both of them. And I have grown to really love him, honestly, and Melania too. And I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, I don't know if they're going to be, you know, I believe they have found Jesus. That's what I don't know. I haven't been with them to ask that question. But I see changes in them. I see changes in their life. And so the difference between Donald Trump and Bill Clinton is that Bill Clinton claimed to be a Christian up front, and his private life was just debauched. And his private life was debauched all the way through the presidency. It wasn't that he'd had affairs a long time ago or maybe even recently with, some of the people that Trump was accused by, and that's probably true. He was a billionaire, good-looking playboy, and he was a godless man. That's what they do. And so Bill Clinton claimed to be a Christian. That was, to me, unforgivable, and yet was living, again, a private, debauched life and continued that. We know that. You know, sex with this young girl, horrible. I wasn't even going to say what kind, but it became, like public discussion. He debauched our public discourse. He debased it by his own behavior, not by things he'd done, but by his current behavior. And it was okay. It changed everything in America in terms of our acceptance of that kind of behavior. And so Donald Trump, while he's been in office, as far as we know, has been a faithful husband to his wife. And I would say, and has never claimed to be a Christian. He hasn't. He has said things in public he has not boasted, I've received Christ and I've been changed. You haven't heard that. You've heard him talk about Jesus and talk about scripture, and you've seen his behavior change, but you haven't seen him make great boasts about his spiritual condition. So I see in them change, and that is part of the gospel, isn't it? Isn't it? And, could I just say to Joe, I don't remember being asked to die for Bill Clinton, for Donald Trump. No one's asking people to die for Donald Trump. Donald Trump's not asking people to die for him. We are putting our lives on the line because we, unlike you guys who fancy yourselves so bright and enlightened, you do not understand what's about to transpire in this nation. You have a lot of words, but you have not reckoned with what you are bringing on in this country to you yourselves as well. The loss of personal freedom, the loss of religious freedom, the loss of the right to make personal choices. You will be made to bow at the altar of whatever debauchery or horrible thing is embraced by this next administration. And so, David French, get ready for that. And Joe, you need to do the same. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.